Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. I'm scrambling this morning. Usually I do my Friday show prep, my football Friday show prep during the Thursday night game because I know I'm going to be up watching it. It's football, man. I'll got my laptop out, getting ready for the show. And I blame the Broncos and the Saints for me scrambling around this morning to get last-second things done because that game put me to sleep last night, put me in a chokehold.
What? Well, my God, how so, Sean? What could possibly, other than a couple of young quarterbacks throwing nothing but 5 to 10 yards,
sometimes successfully completed
routes.
I hate that Bo Nix is 4-3 as a starter. I just hate it. He sucks.
I live for the moments he pulls the ball down and runs.
Oh my God! Oh,
the least sustainable of all.
Hey,
things.
Man, even bad football is good. I'll take it.
But it was. I'll tell you one thing. It was upsetting that, honestly, I felt like the Saints crowd was less energetic than Al Michaels last night. I think that Al Michaels...
saying something.
I feel like Al's energy has been pretty good this year. There was a point late in the game where there was an interception that was never... It never touched the ground, and Al was kept pointing out that, like, well, we don't know if this was a interception or if this was a fumble or not. There was no whistle. I'm like, yeah, the ball never touched the ground, Al. It doesn't matter. There's definitely not going to be a whistle because the ball never touched the ground.
I was fast asleep for that, I can promise you.
Okay, yeah, you didn't miss much. Yeah. You didn't miss much. The Saints run defense, oh my goodness. That was just, I know they're banged up and injured, but my God.
Hey,
that was like warm canola oil out there.
Warm canola oil.
I was going to say soft butter, but that wouldn't do it justice.
No.
Warm canola oil.
Okay, it was literally liquefied. It was that bad.
Yes.
I'm starting to watch these games involving bad teams
mm-hmm.
like you walk around a flea market. You know what I mean? Like, as a Texan fan, you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, I wonder what they got
all
in here.
All the scraps.
Yeah.
Wonder
what we could pry away from these guys in the next few weeks.
Marshawn Lattimore.
Would be nice.
Injured? Or was he was it a little bit of a, hey, you know what?
Help me out. As I told you, I fell asleep like probably end of the first quarter of this game. It was so bad, and you could tell the direction it was going. You could tell the Saints could keep playing. They could keep playing right now, probably with only like 6 Broncos on the field and still be trying to score a touchdown. You could tell, like, this ain't going anywhere. Like, it was easy as halftime. I wish I'd stayed awake for halftime. I'd have fired on halftime bets galore, but I fell asleep. So Marshawn Lattimore went out with an injury, and with a hammy
in the third quarter.
That's
my conspiracy theory is that at the half they're like, "All right, man, let's call it a hammy and get you the hell out of here."
Hammy,
be better for everybody involved.
That's the go-to injury for someone who gets put on the trade block is the hammy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's had a hamstring earlier this season.
Even better,
apparently, which I feel was just good. Good prior planning by everybody involved.
We knew which way
after the first two games where it looked like the Saints were going to be the new offensive juggernaut of the league. Yeah,
how about that? They were. There was a time this season where Dennis Allen and Derek Carr were the toast of the league.
Clint Kubiak was the next head coach hired.
Yeah,
could have found himself, I don't know where, in Las Vegas or somewhere before the end of the season.
Yeah. Turns out he's not, may not be the boy genius we thought he was. He may be good.
I don't think it's, yeah. Look,
Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler ain't the boy genius people thought he was. When was he supposed to be the number one overall pick? Was it 1998?
No.
How long ago was
it? It feels like it.
Remember the preseason?
No. It was whatever year Caleb Williams took over for him. So it was probably the 2022 draft, I think. Because he was supposed to be the number one pick, and then by halftime of the Texas game, it's like, oh, okay, this Caleb Williams guy is a little better than Spencer Rattler. And then they end up going in the same draft class.
Yeah, the 2021 season going into the 2022 draft.
Yep, he was supposed to be the man. So we revel in the horrificness of last night's Thursday night game. 26-3, the final score if you need it. The Broncos beat the Saints in Sean Payton's return to New Orleans last night. So that was pretty cool.
Felt like Sean Payton got mixed crowd reaction. Nothing passionate or not like throaty, lusty boos or anything. Felt like Lutz, the kicker, who was traded, by the way. I don't know what the drama was where I was trying. He got booed a lot more than Sean Payton did. Makes more. I mean, it's easy to boo a kicker.
Sure.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I mean, Sean Payton, they should have no beef with Sean Payton in New Orleans, right? He won a Super Bowl.
It's a classic one of those deals where...
The way he left? Right,
he was retiring, but was he really? Okay. And he just basically wanted to get out of there. Yeah, I think it's kind of like when people who are 30 years old or have been married 30 years get divorced.
Yeah.
Unless all of a sudden, unless it's because the wife found out that, the guy's been living a secret life.
Sure.
A lot of times it's just, okay, these two people grew apart. It's sad.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily hate each other.
Right.
That's what I feel like it should be between... Saints and Sean Payton.
So the reaction in your mind was appropriate then? It was an appropriate level of adulation for Sean Payton.
I think there were some dutiful boos.
Okay.
Probably people out there, people who'd been drinking since, the age of 13, really.
In New Orleans, yes.
Yeah, but also that earlier that day thing, like, I guess I'm supposed to boo here.
Right.
Boo.
Do you think that Colin Cowherd will be appropriately agitated with the lack of respect for his friend Sean Payton today when he does his show? How will he react to their reaction?
This reminds me of when Amazon relocated their central headquarters 3 blocks down the street.
Yeah.
And this is what we all do in America, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. The injury report yesterday. Let's get to that with the Texans, because this is concerning.
Stop it.
Okay, well,
You're just freaking out because you just saw the Saints beleaguered by injuries and looking like there was... They wanted to be anywhere else except playing football last night.
Okay, tough guy. Let's recite the names on the injury list to you.
Yeah, full disclosure, I haven't read the news in 72 hours, this might be a shock to me.
We definitely will not have Kamari Lassiter out there, nor Jimmy Ward in the secondary.
Well, I knew that.
You knew that already. Aziz Alshire and Henry Toa both still not practicing with knee and concussion issues, respectively.
That's just discretion. They're just being careful, Sean.
Okay.
The concussion part with Toa is...
You got no control,
isn't it, man? Yeah, I know Ted used to talk about this, about how back in the day, you'd rather get a concussion than a knee injury. But now I look at, obviously a concussion. You don't want to throw a guy back out there too soon, especially a guy like Toa, who's not afraid to stick his head in there.
Right. He's got an
admirable willingness to throw his head into danger.
Yep.
That'd be the one I'm more pessimistic about. I don't know, with Aziz, I'm a little bit in a state of denial. I feel like, okay, whatever his knee is, they just got to be careful with him and he'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm hoping he swoops into limited today at practice, like kind of like with a Superman cape on, like, I'm here and I'm limited in practice today. I'm here to save you. I am limited today. Yes.
Turn the lights off in the stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll still be pretty light out because it's translucent and all, but still.
Yeah.
And then play some walk-in music and then there we go.
Everybody holds sparklers and that's the pyro,
Mm-hmm.
And he swoops in and, like, I am here and I am limited in practice today. Let's go beat the Packers.
Afterwards, Will Anderson would say it was the most motivational thing he's ever seen. And he's just ready to go out and tear it all up.
Yeah. That's just Aziz, man. That's what he does. He fires me up, man. Every day I walk over to his locker and he fires me up. Yeah.
We'll play some Matt Burke audio later. It's impossible not to think of George Springer when Matt Burke says what he says about Will Anderson.
Yeah.
There's a very George Springer quality to Will Anderson's presence.
That's a great comparison. That is a really good comparison. Enthusiasm, like genuine, like leadership style enthusiasm, not fake hustle, kind of.
Not quite a deep pull or anything. It's not like I went back to the 70s Astros or something.
That's a good cross-sport comparison. Revel in it for a second, man. You did good.
Thanks,
Seriously, though, how concerned are you about these linebackers possibly missing the game?
I'm really concerned. I think Neville Hewitt, who is a candidate for my Circle of Swarm today, who came in relief and was very, very good after not playing linebacker all season long.
Yeah.
He had one snap at linebacker all season headed into this, that there is possibly going to be a whole lot of pressure on him and Jake Hansen and whomever else they kind of shuffle through there if both those linebackers are out. The biggest thing I guess I'm concerned about is that, when those guys go down in a game, and Neville Hewitt has to play, and the Patriots have a rookie quarterback and haven't really game planned for it, that's one thing. It's another when you've got a whole week to plan for both linebackers being injured and Kamari Lassiter being injured and Jimmy Ward being injured.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Against a really good offensive coordinator and a really good quarterback, it gets amped up about sevenfold in terms of difficulty.
Yeah, so Kamari Lassiter will get D'Angelo Ross for another week at corner. And I'm guessing a ton of Kalen Bullock with no Jimmy Ward out there, right?
Right, right, yeah. And Kalen Bullock, look, awesome. Does a bunch of awesome stuff out there. I think there's times where you do miss Jimmy Ward's experience and his ability to anticipate and understand when you're reading the whole field. And, Kalen makes some awesome plays on the ball. There's just some times when he's playing deep safety where it's not quite Johnny on the spot because he doesn't see things the same way a veteran's going to see him just yet. But I mean, so I remain very excited about Kalen Bullock for the future, but there's something that you miss out on just the veteran experience of a Jimmy Ward.
It's a big game for the D-line then. I mean, all the things you're saying, it's a big game for the D-line.
This is Al's any kind of defense is get a really good pass rush.
Yes.
And there you go. But the thing that I worry about is that, look, Neville Hewitt especially, no problem, no issues about him coming up to stop the run.
Right.
But his same eagerness to stop the run in the past has been a liability on play-action passing. And guess who's really good at play-action passes?
The best,
Sean?
Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, the best.
The Green Bay Packers.
Might be these guys. Yep, you're right. All right, let's get to it. Let's dig into this game a little deeper. We'll do the six-pack here coming up next. Six things that we're watching for in the game on Sunday. Packers-Texans, man, this is going to be one of the bigger games on Sunday. This is a really good slate of games. We'll get to that at 7 o'clock. There are some fun storylines in this NFL schedule on Sunday. We'll do that at 7 when we stack the card. We'll do the six-pack coming up next. We've got 5 reasons I hate you for Green Bay later, and we've got 5. We have found 5 reasons to hate Green Bay, so we'll get to that. We'll do our Circle of Swarm at 7:20. It's busy, man. It's a football Friday. Let's get it. 713-572-4610. Six-pack up.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
We have great listeners. A lot of listeners making the point like, hey, maybe the tepid response for Sean Payton was because he basically left them in salary cap chapter 11.
He left them
with the credit cards all maxed out and took off for Denver.
I didn't expect them to cheer or anything. Yeah. I think it's that kind of, it's just an uncomfortable situation where they respect what he did. But yeah, I mean, the Saints were the one team that was always super annoying because people would say, well, see, salary cap isn't real. Yeah, nope, you can do whatever you want. Like, nah, at some point you got to pay the piper. And Peyton kind of just lived that way, knowing that, hey, at some point I'm going to get the hell out of here and it's going to be their issue and not ours.
Yep.
So that, I mean, Bill O'Brien did the same damn thing. It's just he did it over the course of 1 year.
Yeah. Well,
extreme spending.
And did not create a Super Bowl contending team.
Right. That was a big thing. Right.
Like the Saints are always in it every year. I mean, Drew Brees is a big part of that, obviously, but yeah. Yeah, he left them high and dry. That's
I mean, Drew Brees is a little bit a part of that, too, just that they kept pushing his money off into the future.
Yeah.
They were still paying. He might still be on their cap a little bit.
He could
bit.
Be. Well, their cap is still in hell right now. They're in rough shape. And now they're not good at football, so there you go. All right, let's get to this. Let's preview this game, six-pack style. Storylines, people, things to watch for in this game. Let's start with number one, the return of Denico Autry. This is a big one, especially considering the injuries the Texans have at linebacker and in the secondary. They're going to need to get a push up front. Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson have been doing a decent job of that this year. Will Anderson coming in as the reigning defending defensive player of the week in the AFC. But they get Denico Autry back, and this will be really interesting to see what he looks like, having not played in an NFL football game since the end of last season, coming off of his six-game suspension for PEDs. Here was Matt Burke yesterday on what Denico Autry adds.
I would say he's tough. Toughness, first and foremost. I would say he's a very unique rusher, just as a sort of, not really, I want to say hybrid, but as a big end and an inside rusher. I mean, he's had success at both spots, so it's he just offers some different pitches in terms of when he rushes inside, he rushes like an end inside, which is hard sometimes for guards. A lot of times offensive linemen interior can, there's not a lot of space. It's close quarters combat when you're rushing inside, right? And so sometimes there's not a lot of room for moves or things. You got to be a little bit more direct. Somehow he's able to create some space and rush. Like when you're rushing on the edge and you have sort of a little bit more area to like build momentum and put a move on and stuff because you're operating in a wider space. He kind of brings that ability inside, which is kind of hard sometimes. It's pretty unique for him. So he can rush on the edge, he can rush inside, and I think he's just, because he's kind of like a, said again, like sort of a in-between type of end tackle, he kind of brings a little different style of rush to the front.
Yeah, it's I was really intrigued by Matt Burke and the way he described that, so I went back and watched a little bit more of Denico Autry to see what he was talking about. I think the key technical aspect to everything that Matt Burke just said was extreme violence. The extreme violence is how he does it. He's very powerful and explosive, but he's not a defensive tackle. People asked me yesterday, okay, can he play three technique? Not every down. He's not that big and that strong, but by defensive end standards, he's really explosive and strong. So he gets in there in close quarters and he kind of just gives you the 6-inch death blow to create space, and then he's still skinny enough to get through small windows, and he's got a really good feel for getting his hands up in passing lanes, just taking the right angles. It's fun to watch him play, and I think it's going to be a big boost to that defensive line, which has been playing pretty well, but like this is just a different element. I think he might be the most violent defensive tackle on the defensive line, or yeah, defensive lineman on the defensive line.
Yeah, I am. I'm very excited for the first third and long in this game with him and with Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter all on the field at the same time.
Now, another good thing that Matt Burke pointed out was that for a team that rotates their defensive line a lot, the Packers do a good job of making it hard to substitute. They just do a lot of quick count, no huddle stuff that just makes it hard to get guys on and off the field. So with a guy like Denico, who's first game back, you don't want him stuck out there for a 12-play drive.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see exactly how they scheme the rotation. It'll be interesting to me and like seven other people trying to figure that stuff out. Everybody else just watch the football game and enjoy
there
it.
There you go. All right, number two. We got injuries on defense, and how do these end up manifesting themselves? There's some things the Packers, if the Texans are missing Azeez Alshire and Henry Toa Toa in this game, along with what we know are going to be injuries in the secondary, how does this play out on the field, especially for a Packers team? This ain't the Patriots. They got a deep receiving core. They got a deep tight end room. They've got Josh Jacobs running the football. Here's Matt Burke yesterday on Green Bay and their ability to spread the ball all over the place.
Honestly, I think it probably like lends back into our philosophy of like, we've got to be good at what we're doing, because you can't say we're going to take this guy away and then that stops the offense, obviously. And I would say Matt's done a really good job of structuring the offense and coaching the quarterback to like get the ball to where it's supposed to go, right? You have a coverage, there's the answer, ball's out to it quick. So I think it sort of almost leans back into our saying like, man, we've just got to run our defense and play our coverages right and be tight when we need to be tight, or be off where we need to be off, or whatever that is, so that, yeah, because you're not just focusing on we gotta take a guy out or anything like that. That's obviously not the case. They're all really good players and they all do it. I think the structure of the offense is really good. They do a good job of just putting those guys in the spots to be successful, so we can't worry about who's where and which guy's doing what. We've got to sort of like play our defense and play our coverage and be right in our rules, and then it should play out from there.
The fun part is going to be, I think, playing it safe and conservatively, but then blitzing selectively, which is what D'Amico and Matt Burke have done a good job of all year is that they still don't blitz a boatload. They're blitzing more than they usually have in the past. But on third downs especially, they'll release the hounds if they feel like it's time. And then you've got Jordan Love, who, as Marquez that we had on yesterday, the radio host from
Marcus
Wisconsin.
Eversole, yep.
Is it Marquez or Marcus?
Marcus. Marcus Eversole. Yeah, it looks like Marquez.
Spells it Marquez. All right.
It's
so
Marcus.
Yeah. Marcus said that Jordan Love is more Favre than Rodgers. Yeah. So Rodgers was very, very careful with the football. Favre was a recluse pirate with the football. And hopefully you see the more Favrean version when you're blitzing him, as long as everybody's covered downfield.
Yes.
And force Jordan Love into some errors.
That would be great if he threw one up in the game. Are you more concerned about the injuries at linebacker or the depleted secondary in this game?
I'm more concerned about linebacker because I think that which, I mean, that flows over into the safeties because I'm worried about play action.
Yeah.
And I think the Packers especially are just going to, they could feast over the middle. And, you know, that puts the safeties in a bind where they don't know how much, like, okay, the Packers are feasting over the middle. They want to come up and help out. And then all of a sudden that's when you have a coverage bust. So that all starts with the linebackers and potentially not being great in play action.
All right, let's get to number three. Doing the six-pack here. Storylines for the Packers game on Sunday with the Texans. Was last week's run game real? They put up 192 yards. It was very, very top-heavy. 59 of those came on a Joe Mixon run. 54 of those came on one Damian Pierce touchdown run. Here was Bobby Slowick yesterday on carrying Joe Mixon's New England game here into week 7.
Yeah, it's always, anytime you get a good player back, you know, it's always helpful for sure. I would say he made some really good plays in that game and would love to see that continue every game if we could. But the other thing that really jumped off in the last game was we really blocked well up front. You know, we had great intent. We were on the details of what we had to do. We were moving people that we needed to move. And that's New England's historically a very tough scheme. And our guys up front did a really good job to give Joe and Damian some daylight.
Okay. Was it real last week, Seth? What was real?
It was kind of real. I think part the thing that's very real is that Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce are more explosive, have more big playability than Ogunbowale or Cam Akers, RIP. And so that part's real. I'm not as bullish on the actual blocking itself. I do think that some of the good stuff were some of these whams and traps that they ran where it's cool and that's a good mix-up and that's a good thing to keep defensive linemen honest as a complement to your zone running game. But I still feel like they've still got a lot of stuff to clean up with their run blocking. But you're, instead of getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage with Joe Mixon, at the very least, you're going to get 3 or 4 yards on a lot of those plays where the blocking isn't perfect and every now and then he's going to bust one out. So I'm not overly optimistic about it, but I'm just happy to have Joe Mixon and apparently, hopefully, this new version of Damian Pierce.
Well, they're banking on this new version of Damian Pierce.
They
are banking on it heavily. So we'll see. My concern with the run game is I was really happy last week. Again, I'd much rather have, I'll take 192 yards, a top heavy version compared to what they'd had without Joe Mixon. Obviously, my concern still with this run game is in the, when you're not running for 50 plus yards on a play, are you putting CJ Stroud in 2nd and 5 instead of 2nd and 9? When you're ahead, hopefully in this game with 5 minutes to go and the Packers have 2 timeouts, can you go get yourself 2 or 3 first downs without having to rely on CJ making unbelievable computer generated throws to Nico Collins on 3rd and 11 to keep it. And I know Nico's hurt, but I'm referring back to the drive in the Colts game in week 1. Can you lean on the run game to do what run games are supposed to do in this offense when you're ahead at the end of games? I'm not confident in that right now.
And I think that's where Joe Mixon as a receiver comes in, though, too, is that there are as long as you can be in third and manageable or what have you, there's a lot of opportunities to get Joe Mixon the ball as a receiver.
Yep.
And so it all comes back to Joe Mixon. He's just got to stay healthy.
Got to stay healthy. All right. Number 4, Dalton Schultz. If not now, then when? Here was Bobby Slowick yesterday talking about C.J. Stroud. Very complimentary of Dalton Schultz on things that probably the average fan doesn't see out there. Obviously, the stats haven't been there for Dalton yet. Here's Bobby Slowick on C.J. Stroud's complimentary or positive comments about Dalton Schultz.
Yeah, I'd say he kind of took that upon himself, you know. And we have a lot of movements in our offense. You know, there's some different formations, there's some different words. And when you have somebody back there that's not always only the quarterback, so everyone's not asking one guy all the questions. When you have somebody else back there that can just quickly give an answer, no, you're here, or you got a motion after this, or just really quick responses to get people on track is huge. And he really takes pride in doing that, and that's helped CJ immensely, I know. And then, you know, I know statistically he hasn't had the greatest start as far as receptions, but we've missed a couple throws, you know, that him and CJ are grinding through the connection. He's had some ops that we haven't made, and as the year goes, just like it has with a lot of the guys that we started the year that way, that'll continue to click.
Green Bay does not defend tight ends well, at least thus
far. No, they're
one
of the worst in the league. Yeah. They've let up they're in the top five for yards allowed to tight ends, so this is an opportunity for Dalton Schultz. Look, if he's the guy that has to help people get lined up and direct traffic and everything, I have a little bit of sympathy for that. That's that does that, yet at the same time, the true veteran can do both. He can help everybody out and then go. This is like some substitute teacher who's trying to write the great American novel, but these damn kids won't leave him alone. And he starts blaming the kids for why he's not actually that good a writer, right? Okay? Like, at some point, just listen. Publish or perish, Dalton Schultz. Yeah, publish or perish.
I love that analogy. all right, let's make sure we get to these. Number five, protect the football. This is a really good Packers defense when it comes to generating turnovers. No team in football does it better. 17 turnovers generated this year. They are plus 8 on turnover margin. Here's Bobby Slowick on the Packers secondary.
Yeah, they fly around. You know, they know what they're doing. They're on the details of their defense. I think Halfley does a really good job, you know, as far as schematically putting them in the right spots and letting them go cut it loose and play what they see. When they get there, they make the play almost every time. You know, like, every mistake against this defense is costly, and that's in the pass and the run game. You get loose with the ball in the run game, they make you pay. And there's been a number of fumbles that have been on the ground this year also. So that's really big for us. Just our this whole week has been protect the ball and how intentional we have to be in doing that, and how the scout team has to give us great looks at making sure that we do that in this game, because that's going to be a huge factor.
The secondary, obviously, Xavier McKinney has 5 interceptions on the year. Jair Alexander has a couple of interceptions. They poke the ball out. I feel good about the Texans' ball security.
Yeah.
Their receivers and tight ends and everybody, when they have the ball, they... A lot of Texans cover up with both arms all the time. Stephon Diggs does that. So I think they've got the appropriate level of focus on ball security. It really just comes down to, okay, C.J. Stroud versus the secondary, and can they fool him? Can they force him into forcing a throw? All of that, which C.J. has talked about this week, too. I mean, he's super aware of all that.
The only Texan skill guy, and I'm not counting C.J. as a skill guy, because we know C.J. had a fumble in the Buffalo game. The only Texan skill guy to put it on the ground this year is playing for the Vikings now. It's Cam Akers.
Oh, yeah. Cam Akers in the Chicago game.
Yeah, yep. So
that one nice drive they had. I think that with CJ versus this secondary, it's starting to be a lot of fun, because CJ, I think, is seeing anything and everything from opposing defenses, and they're trying and testing his patience, and I think he's doing a really good job of it. It's just, you know, continuing to get better at being surgical. Like, defenses are putting the Texans in a position where they've just got to drive the ball down the field in 10 to 15 plays instead of in deep shots.
Yeah.
And they're getting cleaner and better at it, but that's the Tom Brady level. Like, that's where Tom Brady could just dink and dunk his way down the field when nobody else could, because it's just hard to do it without shooting yourself in the foot at some point.
Yep. Last thing, my prediction on this game, I have the Packers 31-27. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be one of the more fun games of the year. I think home field and just the injuries on defense catching up to the Texans at some point in this game, and I think the Packers hit a big play at some point. I got Packers 31-27.
Yeah, and I'll have my prediction at the end.
Sounds
still
good.
You and I are right around in the same territory.
Okay.
In terms of total points and everything.
Sounds good. I like this. I give mine early. Seth kind of cogitates a little bit, and he gives his late in the show. I like that.
Sometimes maybe I'm waiting for an injury report or something.
That could
hypothetically
be.
Maybe. Yeah.
You do it with more info. That's smart. I'm not as smart. All right, headlines. Let's get to headlines next. We'll get you up to speed on those injuries with the Texans. Thursday night football, playoffs last night in baseball. Man, Cleveland last night, that was something. We'll get to all of that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's start with the injury report for the Houston Texans. Same as Wednesday when it comes to guys missing practice. Literally the same six guys. So this will be a big one today to see if any of these guys get upgraded. But Azeez Al-Shaair, Henry Toa, your two starting linebackers, both are out with knee and concussion issues, respectively. You've got Foley Fatakasi, who's missing on the defensive line this week. He's out with a shoulder. Kamari Lassiter and Jimmy Ward are going to miss this game on Sunday with injuries. Shoulder for Lassiter, a groin for Ward. And Robert Woods, veteran wide receiver with a foot, still on the injury report. So the defensive side of the ball is, if this holds up, Seth, and this plays out to where they're missing all these guys on Sunday,
yeah,
it is a Swiss cheese depth chart going on right now for the Texans.
A Swiss cheese depth chart, except that it also does open the door for, oh, wow, yeah, if you beat the Packers with this scrappy bunch of underdogs.
Opportunity. Yeah. I like where your head's at, Seth.
Yes, yeah, yes, like Sean. That. This is an opportunity. And especially when you get Denico Autry back into the fold. Now, you lose Mario Edwards, but you're getting Denico Autry, who's a more overall impactful player, or at least has historically in his career. He's got fresh legs. So if the Texans pull this off versus the Packers, I think it'll be even more impressive than most people outside of Houston or Green Bay would realize, because they're up against it with some of the injuries.
Yeah, they're banged up, and they're missing Nico Collins still too. Like, with all these injuries on defense, you know, we haven't had a chance to wallow in the misery that is Nico Collins not being there at all this week. So they're missing Nico too. So there are some, and they're going to be missing Nico for two more games after this one as well. He's on IR.
Was it the 2012 season when it was like Arian, Andre, and some other key player were never on the field at the same time? It was there was another period, and ultimately that didn't work out that year.
It had to be 2013. It had to be 2013.
Well, yeah, I thought there was a year where they were playing well despite everybody not being, and going into 2013.
I don't remember.
We're like, yeah, but now just imagine with all those guys on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
So far, right now, you look at it, they're 5-1. It doesn't feel like they've really played their best football, even when guys are healthy. But you can also say, yeah, and they're 5-1 despite not having Nico Collins, despite not having Joe Mixon for a lot of it.
Tank,
so
it's
okay to dream about everybody being healthy together.
No doubt. Game is at noon on Sunday. Kicks off at noon, and you can get Texans Countdown started at 9 a.m. with me and Seth here on Sports Radio 610. Thursday Night Football last night, literal snoozer. I think I said earlier the final score was 26-3, because that's what it was when I woke up in my chair in the middle of the fourth quarter and then decided to go to bed. It wound up 33-10. So there were a couple more touchdowns scored in garbage time in that game.
There was an interception returned for... you fell asleep before the interception returned for a touchdown.
I fell asleep before anything really fun happened in that game. Yeah, yeah. By all accounts, and I'm judging from some of your comments in our rundown about the passing chart for both quarters, doesn't sound like I miss much, Seth.
No. I didn't stay awake for the whole rest of the game either. Yeah. It just I caught up this morning on the second half. But it was it was not good football. It was not good football by any stretch of the imagination. It felt like a preseason game, just with
starters,
more stupidity, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the big news out of this one, the Denver Broncos somehow are 4-3 on the season with a starting quarterback who by some metrics is in Deshaun Watson territory right now.
Right. They have a really good defense.
Yeah.
They have an excellent defense, and without getting too much more into it,
that's
there you go.
They
got a quarter. They've got a quarterback who can do things. He can do stuff.
He can make
just
a
can't
play.
Do it all the time or consistently.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So that was Thursday Night Football last night. 33-10. The Broncos beat the Saints in Sean Payton's return to New Orleans. Meanwhile, the Major League Baseball playoffs, the Yankees were one strike away from putting the Cleveland Guardians on life support. They were one strike away from going up 3-0. And then Jonkenzie Noel hits a two-run homer with two strikes and two outs in the bottom of the ninth to tie the game. And then David Fry of the Guardians hits a walk-off two-run homer in the 10th. And now all of a sudden the ALCS is a series, which is kind of fun. I've given my reasons why I'm rooting for the Yankees over the Guardians. I won't go into that in headlines here, but I'm all for the fun, and it was a cool ending to that game. Now, meanwhile, in the NL, the Mets are dead. The Dodgers are up 3-1 in that series. They beat them 10-2 last night. We're going to get the Dodgers in the World Series. It's just a question of do we get the Yankees there with them and have all of America, other than L.A. and New York, hating what it is they're watching.
It's good for baseball, I would suppose, I guess, if it's Dodgers-Yankees. They'll get some good ratings and all of that stuff. Do we cheer for baseball in this instance? I just don't care about the Guardians.
I just don't want the Dodgers to win the World Series.
Okay.
That's my biggest thing. If you're asking me, like, my biggest... Because I've disclosed who I'm rooting for in each of these LCSs.
Yeah.
But if my biggest thing that I'm rooting for, if I could sell my soul for one thing, if I were to be able to do that, it would be for the Dodgers to not win the World Series. That's it.
Okay.
And I think a lot of Astro fans are with me on that. I'm curious.
You could probably sell your soul
somewhere
to somebody. There's lots of people that might do it. Like that. Boy, that's a tricky one.
Selling my soul?
Yeah, because I don't know. If you could bilk somebody into it that actually believed that they were buying your soul somehow,
yeah,
then there's a little cash in your pocket. But then you run the risk of like, what if they... Why are they willing to spend this money for my soul?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they might be on to... This might be the real deal.
There's better
souls. Don't do it, Sean. No,
I'm not going to do it. There's better souls
out
there.
I have to advise against it.
Thank you. Okay, good. I appreciate that. I'm glad
if somebody were to come in, and say literally, like, hey, Seth, I want to buy your soul for $5 million, it would be really hard. I'd be like, yeah, of course I'll sell this to you. Like literally, you think you're buying my soul and that's all? That's the only thing that's... Like, yeah, here you go. Except there'd be that part of me where I'm like, okay, what if...
Yeah, what if what if on the afterlife, right?
Yeah.
You'd have a lot of fun with that $5 million, though. I would say that. I mean, you do a lot
I might end up... self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right, you might
end up doing something that would send me to hell anyway.
Exactly. All right, I'm glad we workshopped this. The Astros, Minute Maid Park, reportedly, this is according to Michael Schwab, is the first one I saw put this out there, that reportedly... Minute Maid Park will be no more. The new sponsor of the stadium is a company called Daikin. Is that... am I pronouncing that correctly? D-A-I-K-E-N?
I don't know. It's Japanese air conditioning company.
Yeah.
I figured you knew how to say it. just because I've taken 2 5-minute online Japanese courses, Sean, doesn't mean that I actually know how to pronounce it.
Well, you also know way more about air conditioners and fixing stuff like that than I... It's Daikin. Thanks, Ben. It's Daikin.
Daikin. So it's interesting because, look, the carrier dome in Syracuse forever was hilarious because it's an air conditioning company that put their names on a stadium that did not have air conditioning, an indoor stadium that did not have air conditioning. I would imagine, like, Minute Maid, if they go with Daikin, Daikin's an air conditioning company.
Yeah.
And maybe the uncomfortable temperatures from this past
dial
year
back
early
a little
in the
bit.
Season.
Yeah.
Daikin can't be having bad press on the air conditioning stadium.
No, this could be really
good. I'm going to look at this as a confirmation that the Astros are going to make a run at Kikuchi, bringing him back.
It's a Japanese company.
And Kikuchi can end up being like the Yuli Gurriel of Japanese prospects.
That'll
become a destination, just like Houston became a destination for Cuban American prospects. Yeah. Japanese prospects will say, "Well, yeah, I'm gonna do what Kikuchi did and go revitalize my career."
I like that.
So not whether prospects, free agents, whatever.
Yeah.
Revitalize my career with the Astros.
Good angle. I like that. Hey, last one, real quick here. College basketball. Tony Bennett. He's 55 years old. He's a young man when it comes to being a coach, and Tony Bennett kind of looks young.
He looks pretty healthy.
Yeah, he looks healthy.
Yeah.
He retired yesterday from coaching college basketball. And I've not read any long-form pieces on this, although I have seen a few tweets this morning.
Yeah.
And my initial hypothesis appears to be on track to being correct, which is Tony Bennett is the latest kind of old-school coach to look around the landscape and go, yeah, I don't need to be dealing with agents for 16-year-olds anymore.
Yeah, this ain't it. This isn't why I got into coaching.
This ain't what I signed up for.
Yeah, there is that element to it. Because even when Saban always gets accused of hypocrisy anytime he talks about amateurism and athletics or all that. And I get that. I understand it. But the fact of the matter remains that that's part of what a lot of the coaches enjoy is working with kids and having a 3 or 4 year stint to help them develop as young men.
Yeah.
And have some consistency in your pro. If you want to develop a basketball program, to have some consistency of guys actually sticking around to play.
Yeah, man.
And I get that. Yeah, it's interesting with Tony Bennett because he has legitimate health issues, and yet he went the anti-Urban Meyer route.
He stuck around.
And apparently, like, nobody's saying that this is because of health issues.
No.
Even though he could say that.
He could.
The way Urban Meyer used to claim that he had health issues and then miraculously laid clear up.
Yeah.
And then he'd have health issues again.
That's good. That's a good point. I forgot about Tony Bennett and his health issues. All right, so there you go. He's the latest one to say, in my opinion, saying, have fun with your NIL. All right, let's take a look at this week, and we're going to do our Circle of Swarm at about 7:20. So who are the six Texans that are going into the COS this week, the Payne and Pendergast Circle of Swarm? But let's take a look at the card this weekend in the NFL. This is a fun weekend of NFL football with a lot of really, really good storylines. We will get to the best six of those coming up next.